So this is a familiar feel to us. Another Yom Tov, another set of compromised circumstances, another Yom Tov under Corona, and unfortunately, frustratingly, the restrictions of Simchas Torah feel a lot more restrictive and restraining than the restrictions of Sukkot. Sukkot's the first day in Eretz Yisrael, the first days in Chutz Laretz, by definition, or an outdoor experience. We leave our homes. So everything is, I want to say ad hoc, but it's aroi. It was almost a poetic symmetry between not being in our homes and sitting, sleeping, eating in our sukkos, and not being in shuls and davening in street minyanim or in backyard minyanim, if each person on their own. I actually daven in the yeshiva some minyanim, so I want to make sure that it's clear that some of my comments are, I share my davening both with the yeshiva, because the B'nai Chutz Laretz at least are still in yeshiva, so I daven with them, obviously with severe, severe restrictions, masks, open windows, spacing, ventilation, and I daven on the street as well, but obviously I've been part of both experiences. But in Rosh Hashanah was difficult because of the length of the tefillah, but there was nothing about the Rosh Hashanah davening that couldn't be replicated in smaller outdoor minyanim, obviously fewer people singing, so quantitatively, it was less intense. The davening had to be abbreviated because of the weather. So in Eretz Yisrael, was absolutely scorching. And Yom Kippur as well. But then on mitzvahs of Yom Kippur that were handicapped or crippled by Corona. Here we are facing Simchas Torah. And Simchas Torah in everyone's mind evokes imagery of dancing with the Torah, dancing with hordes of people in close quarters, feeling the energy, feeling each other's body, holding the Sefer Torah, passing the Sefer Torah. It's hard to imagine a Yom Tov that's more antithetical to Corona in terms of the practice and whose core activity will be severely, severely restrained, if not entirely eliminated. I don't know what each community is involved in. I've heard certain suggestions, putting the Sefer Torah on a bima, marching around in a broader circumference, holding a Gemara, holding Torah Shavuot Pes. Certainly each community and each group of people are coming up with very inventive and meaningful ways to try to recreate, but one way or another, it's not going to have the ring or the feel of a classic Simchas Torah. So how to navigate this year's Simchas Torah under the Corona, I won't just say restraints, but it feels like a different Yom Tov. I went to a Simchas Beis HaShoeva last night, and I was of the Talmidim, and obviously I was not dancing with the Talmidim. I was standing on the side, clapping, trying to make merry, trying to, really, really on the side, behind plastic. It was a huge outdoor sukkah. And I mentioned to one of my colleagues, I said, for years and years, I looked over at the women's section in Yeshiva the Minhag. I said, women obviously are not involved in dancing and akafos, and just watching the women just trying to make misameach while they were watching other people dancing, I had a sense of what, as I remember, as my memory recalls, watching my wife for all these years, being less involved in the actual Simchas Torah. So none of us are really going to be involved. I guess maybe some will be, some won't. Anyway, it's a lot of different fields, a lot of different minhagim I'm sure people are adopting. But one thing is clear, it's not going to be the classic Simchas Torah. So how to experience Simchas Torah during a corona epidemic? So I think there really are two strategies. The primary strategy is there are many aspects of this Yom Tov that have nothing to do with, or little to do with, the actual celebration surrounding the Torah. And during a normal Simchas Torah, these get a little bit eclipsed or dwarfed by the celebration and the energy surrounding the Sefer Torah. And maybe on a Simchas Torah like this year, where the celebrations withholding the Sefer Torah are a bit muted, maybe some of these other aspects of the day can be more pronounced. The second part is, there are parts to celebrating the Torah that have little to do with dancing. Thinking about those may make it easier for us to anchor or hook into not just peripheral aspects, not peripheral, but other aspects, alternative aspects of Simchas Torah. So there are two strategies. Let's think carefully about the strategies. Number one, obviously for people in Eretz Yisrael, ironically, and I say this, I'll explain the irony in a moment, the challenge is less severe because in Eretz Yisrael we collapse the days of Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeres, which on a normal year makes it even more challenging, a bit hectic of a day. I always chuckle, the only day in Eretz Yisrael that's more hectic, especially for people that come from Chutz Laretz and make Aliyah, the hectic feel of Shavuos, because you stayed up all night, and you have to lean Kriyas HaTorah, Parshas Yisro, Akadamus Milin, Rus, Yizkor, Halel. There's a lot happening, and you're exhausted, and you want to get to sleep. But you have a similar feeling, similar story. It's an Eretz Yisrael Shemina Torah, which doesn't really have that much. It's not really, there are no special mitzvahs of the day, but you are trying to squeeze or slot 2 days into one. This year, if the Simchas Torah won't occupy that much of our emotional attention, because we're not going to dance with the Sefer Torah as much, maybe some of the aspects of Shemini Atzeres could become more prevalent. And Shemini Atzeres, of course, constitutes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's swan song, we would say, to Am Yisrael. The timeline, we've been through three Yom Tovim. And it's not just the timeline of three randomly sequenced Yom Tovim, but there's a historical timeline that represents a national historical program. We became a nation on Pesach. We were endowed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will and Torah on Shavuos. And now it's our responsibility to try, of course, to observe and adhere to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, but also to try to spread that Torah, the message, monotheism, morality, the general messages to the entire world. And Sukkos is the Chag in which we were more universalist in our orientation. The Korbanos, of course, the most famous aspect of the Yom Tov, the Korbanos were 70 Korbanos because there were 70 nations in antiquity. And the whole celebration of Sukkos is less ritualistic. Even the ritual of Sukkos, sitting in a sukkah, has broader connotations. If one can appreciate what it means to sit under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's watchful eye, under his hut, and seshkach, which every human being needs. Matzah has very little meaning for a non-Jew, but sukkah has a lot of meaning for a non-Jew. So Sukkos was a very, very active Yom Tov. I'm just drinking because I'm in my sukkah now. It's very hot today in Eretz Yisrael, so just making sure I drink a little bit of water. I have a sleeping sukkah right near my room, so it's really hot. My regular sukkah downstairs, it's very noisy, so I wanted to record the shiur in relative silence, but it's extremely hot. Some kind of the medrash, the Blessed Lover HaKadosh Baruch Hu places the nachrim in sukkah, and if they don't keep the sukkah, then it shows lack of dedication to mitzvah. So this is a way to show dedication to the mitzvah of sukkah. And the week of Sukkot was very hectic. You can imagine that's probably when most international figures schedule their trip to Jerusalem to visit King Solomon, to visit King David, to bring gifts. You'd imagine Hiram, who built or dedicated materials to the Beis HaMikdash, probably visited during Sukkot, and Malchus Shiva probably visited during Shavuos. And you can imagine throughout those hundreds of years, at least the 400 years of the first Beis HaMikdash, and probably the 400 years of the second, 450 years of the second Beis HaMikdash, it's a lot happening on Sukkot, a lot of international visitors. In fact, in Eretz Yisrael, even today, there's an international parade in which different countries send delegations. Don't think Macy's parade with floats, but just people walking by celebrating Jerusalem as the city of all religions. And so it really had an international feel, very hectic during the week of Sukkot, and then it ends. And it ends after 7 days, like Yom Tovim generally end after 7 days. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want my people to remain one extra day. And we all know the famous Medrash Kasha Alei Pridaschem. Hashem says it's difficult for me to say goodbye, but you have to put it into context to really appreciate its potency. That this is the end of the cycle, the end of Am Yisrael serving its mission, the end of the Yom Tovim, and now we're ready to reboot the cycle in the winter. Before the cycle is rebooted, Hashem wants a private day with us, and it doesn't even need mitzvahs. It's such a day of intimacy and privacy between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his people. So certainly for people in Eretz Yisrael, I recommend more attention to the connotations of Shemini Atzeres, because we aren't immersed as much as normal in the festivities surrounding dancing with the Torah. But what about for people, especially in Chutz Laaretz, for whom Shemini Atzeres will occur on Shabbos, Simchas Torah is on Sunday, so Shemini Atzeres will be well behind in the rearview mirror when Simchas Torah comes, and then Masseh Shabbos comes, and no dancing, and or limited dancing, and what to make of Simchas Torah? So I think that there are two themes in Simchas Torah to consider, independent of the kavod of the Sefer Torah. And then I'll get to ways to recapture kavod Sefer Torah, even without the typical dancing. One is, and this is really the origin, remember Simchas Torah is a Yom Tov which develops, and I'll talk about how this developed, in response to something. What happened? Chazal were misakin that we should read Vizos HaBracha, and we should complete the Torah. They were misakin that we should read it on the last day of the Yom Tov. In this case, Simchas Torah, the second day of Shemini Atzeres and Chutz Laaretz. It's a Gemara and Megillah. We read Vizos HaBracha. Chazal could have chosen other days, but they chose this day for reading Vizos HaBracha, just to break your prejudice, because people think, oh, we read Vizos HaBracha because it's Simchas Torah, because there's some prior designation of the day as a day in which you celebrate the Torah. No, this was always called the second day of Shmini Atzeres. For reasons I'll talk about in a moment, Chazal were mitaken, instituted Kriyas HaTorah of Vizos HaBracha on this day. And slowly but surely, as people read, especially in Chutz Laretz, in Bavel, Vizos HaBracha every year, on that second day of Shemini Atzeres, Minhagim started to develop. Well, if we're reading Vizos HaBracha on the second day of Shemini Atzeres, let's create celebratory Minhagim. So the question is, why were Chazal Metakin reading Vizos HaBracha on the second day of Shemini Atzeres in Chutz Laretz? Why weren't they Metakin, for example, to read the Shabbos afterwards? And every year there'd be a one-week offset. It feels strange to us because we know what our Minhag is. But in theory, each Yom Tov should have what we would call Yom Tov readings. And or they should be misakin that we should finish Vizos HaBracha before Rosh Hashanah, or the Shabbos between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, so between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we typically read Hazinu. There are many, there's a lot of flexibility in the schedule of Kriyas HaTorah. So why were Chazal mitakin, specifically on Shmini Atzeres, to read Vizos HaBracha? And because of that takana, hundreds of years later, the minhag of Simchas Torah emerged. The answer is, and Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote about this, spoke about this one year, is that in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, when we left Shmini Atzeres to return home, and we were returning after three cycles of pilgrimages to Yerushalayim, the pilgrimages were pivoted upon our interaction with the king and learning Torah from the king and feeling our national identity through the king. So we left the king. And when you leave the king, you have to give a bracha to the king. Rashi says this in Rosh Hashanah. You have to give a bracha to the king. So in Shmini Atzeres, again, in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, was one day of Shmini Atzeres. That was their return after three cycles of Yom Tovim. They would give a bracha to the king. The halacha is when you leave your Rebbe, you can't just walk away. You have to give a bracha, formal, procedural, symbolic. Give a bracha. So they give a bracha to Shlomo Melech, Rashi quotes a pasuk. We don't have a king anymore, but our titular king, our symbolic king, is Moshe. Moshe is our Melech. Moshe has status of Melech according to Chazal, Vahi Bishur and Melech. The primary role of a Melech is not just to fight a battle and to lead an economy, but to teach Torah. Moshe was the prototypical Torah teacher, the paradigmatic Torah teacher. So when we leave symbolically every year, when we finish the cycle, we want to recall that when we finish the cycle in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, we concluded the cycle of Shalosh Regalim and we return home for the winter, by taking leave of our Rebbe the King, who had taught us Torah during the three Yom Tovim, and we took leave of our Rebbe the King by offering a bracha. So we take leave symbolically of our historical Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, by reciting a bracha to him. What bracha do we recite to Moshe? We recite the bracha that he recited to us. V'zos ha-bracha, she-barach Moshe es b'nei Yisrael. Moshe delivers a bracha on his deathbed, his love for the Jewish people is apparent. So we recall Moshe's bracha, and that's a symbolic way of offering a bracha to the Melech, Moshe Rabbeinu, just like we used to offer a bracha. It used to be offered on Shmini Atzeres because it was one day. We offer that bracha on the second day of Shmini Atzeres, and that's why Chazal instituted reading Vizos HaBracha, having nothing to do with Simchas Torah, before there ever was a Simchas Torah. Chazal had to choose a day to recite Vizos HaBracha. They chose the last day of the Yom Tov cycle, the second day of Shmini Atzeres, to read Vizos HaBracha as a shout-out or a nod of appreciation to Moshe Rabbeinu. Once Chazal were mitakin to read Vizos HaBracha and to conclude the Torah on the second day of Shmini Atzeres, throughout the hundreds of years after the Talmud, after the Gemara, Minhagim emerged, and I'll talk about these Minhagim, and created the holiday that we know as Simchas Torah. Which is why much of the piyutim, which a lot of people don't say during Hakafos because we're so busy dancing, so many of the piyutim in the songs are celebrating Moshe Rabbeinu. This is not the day Moshe Rabbeinu died, obviously. Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos. Shemin Chamarev, we think about Moshe's death, we recite Siddiq Adin, we experience partial Avelos, limited Avelos during Shabbos after Mincha. But this is the day we think about Moshe Rabbeinu, what he meant to us, and so much of our religion, of course, is apersonal. We don't want intermediaries between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Moshe was the greatest leader, the greatest man to ever live, and we're grateful for all of his kindness and charity. And we think about all of Moshe's accomplishments on Simchas Torah, and so many of the piyutim celebrate Moshe Rabbeinu. Ben Ein Adir Keben Amram, Ve'Ein Adir Keben Amram. There's a lot of piyutim that combine our praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our praise of Moshe Rabbeinu. So this sometimes gets muted on Simchas Torah. I would say as it should. I think there's the primary investment should be in the Sefer Torah and in our direct relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this is a good year to think a little bit about Moshe Rabbeinu, Think about some of the traits that defined his life. Think about, first and foremost, the moral character he displayed. When he was Vaterozo Kitov, when he was born, they saw that he was good. His nickname was Tov, his nickname was Tuvia. Almost immediately, he demonstrates that kindness, that compassion, that moral indignance. He sees an Egyptian flaying a Jew, and he could have easily ignored it, moved on, maintained his life of comfort. He disrupts a fight the next day, even though he's already on the limb. There's a probia for him because he's killed someone, and of course he travels to Midian, and he rescues these innocent Midianite women who, they're really not his issue. He shouldn't be wasting his time and blowing his cover by rescuing these damsels in distress. And then, of course, we see throughout his career how that goodness and kindness and innate compassion and the tenderness that he demonstrates as a shepherd, Chazal talk about his caring about each and every little sheep, that translates to leadership, translates into devotion, translates into saving, loving the Jewish people, laying his own life and career on the line to protect and preserve the Jewish people from annihilation. That's one trait of Moshe that's outstanding. Of course, the most classic trait is the Ish Elokim, the human being who scaled the highest spiritual level that any human being had ever achieved. The words, 40 days and 40 nights without food and drink, are so anesthetizing. They're so numbing to us. I know that I have a hard time every year when I read the Megillah Esther thinking about fasting 3 days. But when I fast Yom Kippur, I can extrapolate that if I stayed in bed the next 2 days with an air conditioner and basically slept, said to Free Tehillim here, that I can imagine making my way through a 3-day fast. I can imagine it. It's not something I would ever try. It's not something it's something beyond, but I can at least extrapolate. Maybe. I can't in my wildest dreams wrap my head around 40 days and 40 nights without food. Now, obviously, Moshe was at a metaphysical level that allowed him to operate beyond the laws of biology, but 40 days and 40 nights, learning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, knowing more Torah than any man that ever lived, the infinity of Torah, the Ish Elokim, it's just astounding. It's just, and then, of course, not just the Torah he studied, but trait number 3, his prophecy. His prophecy was fundamentally different from the prophecies of other Nevi'im. The Rambam iterates the differences. Moshe Rabbeinu saw things clearly rather than in riddles. Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, awake, rather than sleeping. Moshe Rabbeinu had Nevuah on demand, as it were. He spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu freely and willfully. And one of the Ikari Hemunah, one of the foundations of Jewish theology, is A, prophecy. B, that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy would never be replicated. The level of prophecy, that means that everything that Moshe Rabbeinu told us cannot be overturned, or cannot be overtallied by later prophets, which is really at the core of our religion, that the notion that a Muhammad or Jesus would come and offer prophecy that disagrees or refutes Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is completely anathema. It's completely impossible because of our belief that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon HaNevi'im. And then finally, the fourth aspect of Moshe, I have many, many aspects of Moshe to think about. I'm sure you can all fill in the blanks, but I'm just giving 4. Just always think about Moshe standing on Har Nevo, looking lovingly at this land that he just desperate to enter. Chazal say he davens 500 tefillos, and he says, I'll enter as a bird, I'll enter as a rock. And just the privilege that I have to walk and live in this country, and the privilege that most listeners have, even if you don't live in Eretz Yisrael, just to be part of the renaissance and resurgence of our people. You just can't imagine what Moshe Rabbeinu is experiencing in Shemayim as he watches his children returning to the land that he just was caressing with his imagination but can never touch. So it's a day to celebrate the accomplishments of the greatest man to ever live, to learn from those accomplishments. This is the day whose Kriyas HaTorah is pivoted. The genesis of Simchas Torah is the decision of Chazal to schedule reading of Zos HaBracha on the second day of Shemini Atzeres as an honor of Moshe. Once Chazal were talking that, it took off. And one thing led to another, and it became Simchas Torah. But this is a great year to go back to the root of Simchas Torah and think about Moshe Rabbeinu. The second non-Sefer Torah celebration-based aspect of the day that maybe you could think about a little bit more this year in Simchas Torah is the power of Minhag. We all appreciate the power of Minhag. Minhag accompanies every Yom Tov, whether it's the elaboration of Pesach into Kitnias or the Minhagim that are just so sacred, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the Simanim, or the Minhag of Yom Kippur to wear a kittel. You could almost move through every significant Yom Tov and every significant Moadim Bismanim and find Minhagim that are crucial, couple of weeks ago, a boy came over to me and inquired about saying Tashlich. And we all know the Rashitas and Rishonim are opposed to Tashlich because it looks like vicarious atonement, throwing away your sins to the fish, and it looks like Darchei Amori. But I just told him, I said, you know, if you're going to build a life based purely on halacha, it's going to be a very, very hard system of behavior to pass on. Minhag is like the lubricant. It's easier to pass on. It keeps things alive, real, home. What's our minhag? There's just a difference between minhag and halacha. But what happened on Simchas Torah is an amazing one-time event in history. The entire day is based on minhagim. It doesn't appear in the Gemara. Obviously, it appears in Shulchan Aruch after the Gaonim and the Rishonim develop it. But it emerges in the first 1,500 years after the Beis HaMikdash. And then by the time the Shulchan Aruch starts writing his Sefer Halacha, now it's become on the books. It's become part of the landscape of Yom Tovim. But if you interviewed the Amoraim about Simchas Torah, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. If you went over to Abai and Arav and said, well, how do you celebrate Simchas Torah? They may have had some celebration, but they certainly didn't call it Simchas Torah. We have no record of any celebration. If you interviewed Rabbi Akiva, said, here is a Yom Tov that we're celebrating, that Rabbi Akiva didn't, that Yeshaya didn't, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, that no one did. And it shows the power of Minhagim. And it's fascinating to read through halachic responsa throughout this 1,500-year period as Simchas Torah is taking shape, and it takes a lot of different shapes in Ashkenazim and Sephardim and different. And to see how time and again, the Gaonim, roughly until the year 1000, and the Rishonim, roughly until the year 1500, are encountering significant halachic questions. And almost every time they'll say, well, there may be a halachic problem, but the minhag is such and such, and let's keep the minhag on the books. And of course, halacha is supple enough and elastic enough that you can find a heter if you need to. And let me just list some of the issues that are dealt with in this svarim. I'll list the two people who have dealt with them most prominently, and then I'll list the third person who actually shut down some of the celebrations of Simchas Torah for reasons that he felt were just too extremely violation of halacha. The issues at hand were as follows. Most of the celebrations, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, surrounded beautification of the Torah, beautification of the Beis HaKnesses, through tapestries, through frescoes, through clothing, ornaments, jewelry. And what typically happened was they would make ornamental coronas. It's a strange word to use, but that's a word that popped into my mind. Tiaras, crowns for the Sefer Torah. And then these crowns that they would use on the Sefer Torah, or that would be used the whole year in the Sefer Torah, depending upon the minhag, would then be worn by the children, would be worn by the grooms of that year who had been married or would be married when they were married, or be worn by the groom of the day who became the Chasen Torah, the person who finished the Torah. I'm chuckling to myself, the biggest chutzpah to be the Chasen Torah this year because I'm in yeshiva. I'm one of the only rabbanim around. So I guess I finally found a way to become Chasen Torah is to have a worldwide pandemic. So I'm the only one around, so I get Chasen Torah. Anyway, so what are the questions? So one question is a man, a chassan, child, whoever, allowed to wear jewelry? Because it's le'il bash gever simlas isha. Can he wear these crowns and tiaras that look like something especially ancient women would wear, but certainly men wouldn't walk around wearing? Number two, once you'd put these crowns and jewelry on a Sefer Torah, could people then wear them? Or does the fact that we use for a Sefer Torah because of the Isser of Kedusha Sefer Torah, or certainly Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'ein Moridin, could you actually wear those crowns? Number three, when you painted all these large shawls and tapestries and embroidered parochas, a special environment. You read some of the reports, what happened. We'll talk about this a little bit later. But some of them contain pictures and some of them contain imagery. You're not supposed to have imagery in general, and certainly not at Beis HaKnesses where you're bowing down even to two-dimensional imageries. And then finally, especially in the early periods, there was a lot of a aromatic experience, olfactory experience. So they would burn spices or rose petals to create smell. You're not supposed to create smell in Yom Tov. There's an isser of holadas reach, which may be an isser of metakin clay, maybe an isser of just creating something, malach midrabanan. So you've got a really, really rich set of shelos v'tshuvos about Simchas Torah. And time and again, you just see, you know where this is heading. Sometimes when you read a tshuva, you know where this is heading. It's just a question of finding the right reasons to reach that conclusion. And you know that Rav Haigon is going to be matir. He's not matir, actually. Some of the burning of reeds and of aromatic herbs because of the concern that you may cut them down on Yom Tov, or because even the burning may be problematic, but he's matir. All the beautifications and ornamental celebrations around the Sefer Torah, the Rashba in the Eighth Chelek, the Shuvat HaMiuchasas Ramban, Simin Reish Samach, he says, well, I have a problem with putting the crown of the Sefer Torah on people, and if they weren't married like that, I would probably usher it, but the minhag has become that way. It's not really desecrating the Kiddush of the Torah because you're celebrating the Torah. You hear the appreciation for how powerful these minhagim have been and the wariness on the part of Rishonim to walk down or step down some of these minhagim. Exceptional is the Sefer HaManu, Rabbeinu Reuven HaYarchi, 14th century French Rav, who did shut down in 1304 in his city in France, whichever city asked him. He did shut down some of the ceremonies and some of the customs about the burning of aromatic herbs and about putting the Sefer Torah's ornaments on men, men or women, I forget what they went to put it on. But I think there was a case in Baghdad in the 19th century where they had tapestries with animals on it, and the Rav was forced to shut it down because of not bowing down to two-dimensional imagery. So there are localized instances, but it really demonstrates the power of Minhag. This is something which is completely... Pesach was known to the Tanaim and Amoraim, was known to the Nevi'im. This is something which is ours. This is something... I wrote about this. Maybe I'll put a link to this. I wrote about it. I gave a share for one of the programs on it. The power of Minhag to create a Yom Tov and a gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to celebrate the Torah. The second challenge, the second way of responding to the challenge is not just drifting towards non-Sefer Torah-based elements of the day and celebrating the power of Minhag or celebrating, but thinking about how to celebrate Simchas Torah even without the typically collective communal dancing. And I think that there are two things to think about. First of all, dancing, certainly dancing seven times, but even dancing on Simchas Torah, I'm just thinking to myself, it's about 450 years old. If Simchas Torah is about 2,000 years old, a little bit less, probably maybe 1,500 years old, dancing is 500 years old. So what was Simchas Torah like during that 1,000-year period? Let's just round it off, 500, more or less, to 1,500 before. Dancing started in Tzfat. The Ari HaKadosh was very makbid to dance. His Talmidim then spread it from Eretz Yisrael back to the Galus, primarily the Shluchim, who would go, in many cases, to collect money. They'd carry the Minhag of Eretz Yisrael, the Minhag of the Ari. Chassidus obviously adopted it and mainstreamed it. So what happened on Simchas Torah during those 1,000 years of Simchas Torah development without dancing seven times? So a lot of it was decorating the Torah, decorating the shul, and that sadly enough is missing because we're not in shul. But a lot of it was just saying psukim while the Aron was open, saying a lot of psukim, and we still have that. Those 15 or so, 17 psukim, Ata Haresi Ladas, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, Einod Milvado, V'Amar Bayom Ahu Zeh Hashem, Kivin Alo, Negila V'Nitzvacha Bishosa. They're very, very powerful psukim. Normally, when we take a Sefer Torah out of the Aron, we take one Sefer Torah out of the Aron, very quickly put it back, we said a few psukim even to Aron, because it'd be maybe too lax and relaxed to just luxuriate and walk around with the Sefer Torah. But on Simchas Torah, all the Sefer Torah and these Minhagim are taken out. In fact, the word Minhagim to keep the Aron HaKodesh open the entire Simchas Torah, to open it from the beginning to the end. That's no longer a Minhag, but there were Minhagim like that, to put all the Sefer Torah on the table. We'll take out all of our Sefer Torah, I hope, whatever we can, based on health restraints. But certainly those Psukim, and I'd like to draw attention, those 15 or so Psukim that we recite before the Hakafos begin, and the piyutim we say, or we don't say, because on a normal Simchas Torah, we're just really involved in the dancing, and everything before the dancing feels preclimactic, and everything after the dancing feels anticlimactic, but they are beautiful psukim. And each hakafa has beautiful piyutim. And this year, where we're not laser-focused on dancing, it's a nice idea to think long and hard about the psukim, what the psukim mean, and to actually read the piyutim and what the piyutim mean, or at least to think about the piyutim. So not dancing with a Sefer Torah does not equal not celebrating the Sefer Torah. It's become such a custom of habit that we can't imagine glorifying and celebrating the conclusion of the Torah without dancing. But if you take a time machine, you go back 600 years, and you land in the middle of France, or Spain, or Baghdad, or Turkey, or Israel, before the Ari HaKadosh, and you show up in a shul in Simchas Torah, there is a lot of celebration, there is a lot of beauty, there is a lot of ornaments, and tapestries, and parochuses, and children, and not that much dancing. It's much more procedural and ceremonial. So if this is a year without dancing, it's a bit of a throwback, Simchas Torah. And there are ways to think about celebrating the Torah. Again, I don't know how many people can hold the Torah. Maybe hold the Torah Sheba'al Peh, your favorite sefer. But just when you recite those psukim, pay attention to those psukim. That's my primary recommendation. And the final recommendation is, I don't know how much dancing there will be, but I imagine that every single shul, every single minyan, every single group of people davening will march around something seven times around the Sefer Torah. Now, how broad the perimeter of that march will be, how closely grouped and clustered people will be, it's anyone's guess. It's going to be large, large perimeters with a lot of spacing between them. But there's going to be some semblance of walking around. And that, of course, comes from the Ari HaKadosh in the 16th century. But why seven times? Where do we get seven Akafos? Seven Akafos probably comes from the seven times of Hoshanas. Shana Rabbah, tomorrow will also be walking around in some form. Where does all that come from? Where does walking around seven times come from? So I'll be postures. There are many, many different explanations. But the simple approach is walking around seven times comes from walking around Yericho seven times. Now, when we walked around Yericho seven times, we're looking to break down walls. In that case, the walls of Yericho that were protecting the city and preventing or impeding our entry into Eretz Yisrael. This year, we've got a lot of other walls to break down when we walk around seven times. We are literally living behind walls in our homes, behind plastic cubicles, in capsules. But more metaphorically, we feel, unfortunately, as if there's a big wall between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's hard to understand His presence in this world. And it's not just a wall 2020, it's a wall that we've been living with for 2,000 years. B'yom she'nechreva beis hamikdash. The Gemara says in Brachos, it's been a really difficult wall. It's been separating us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 2,000 years. We've started to break down that wall. Unfortunately, this year that wall feels harsher and less penetrable than ever. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is right behind that wall. And it wants us to break down that wall. And we walk around seven times, even if it's a halting, non-energetic, but certainly not the hyperactive, exciting, enthusiastic, contagious, because it's a bad word, 220, but you know, the contagious energy, we all feed off each other's energy. So they think about what we want to break down, the walls we want to break down, not the walls of Yericho, but the walls between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So these are four recommendations for Simchas Torah 2020, the Corona Simchas Torah. Number one, think about elements of the day that have nothing to do with celebrating the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu knew who he was, the power of Minhag. We can celebrate the Torah, even if we don't dance. People celebrated Simchas Torah without dancing for hundreds of years. And when we dance, even if our dancing is a little bit different, we're looking to break down walls. Good Yom Tov.